I might drop the F-bomb every now and then.
Well, then you're in good company, yeah. Dave. Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with guest Dave Warnock. He is an ex-pastor who was recently diagnosed with ALS, and he teaches us about dying out loud.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hey!
And Tim Wick.
It's me!
And we are here to talk about our new guest, Dave Warnock. Dave, hello.
Hello, hello.
Dave's Skyping in from Tennessee, and he is an ex-pastor who has recently been diagnosed with ALS, and he's here to talk to us about carpeing the fucking diem. Is that right? Did I hit that right?
Yep, carpe the fucking diem. That's what I'm living by.
Excellent. So, Dave, you reached out to us to talk to you're going on a bunch of different podcasts and shows.
I am.
To really spread your message about dying with dignity and living your death out loud.
Dying out loud. Yes.
Dying out loud. There it is. Mm-hmm. So, before we get into that, I did want to give our listeners just a little bit of backstory about you. And a lot of this, is available online. So in other places, but I just wanted to ask. So, first of all, you're a pastor. What branch of Christianity were you a pastor in?
Well, I was in the evangelical fundamentalist movement most of my life, Pentecostal, for lack of a better, phrasing.
Yeah, yeah.
I did the talking in tongues and believed in the inerrancy of Scripture and healing and all those things.
Were you raised in the Pentecostal church?
No, I wasn't. I was a product of the Jesus movement in the 70s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so then at what age did you kind of, I guess, find what at the time was your belonging in the Pentecostal church?
I was radically saved at the age of 18.
Oof.
in December of 73. I was raised in a non-religious home, and so we just kind of I didn't have any reference point for any of it, and then got caught up in the Jesus movement and got saved and baptized with the Holy Spirit at the age of 18, and spent the next 3.5 decades in various kind of ramifications of mm-hmm. Pentecostalism, different kinds of non-denominational churches. My latter years were in a Foursquare church, which is a Pentecostal denomination out of California.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that, of those years, I was paid staff. I've been on staff as associate pastors, pastors, youth pastors, worship leaders. A lot of that time I was in business, had my own business, but I was a lay leader, and I've always been involved in teaching and preaching and small group leading and all the stuff.
What was it when you were 18 that got to you, that allowed you to be radically saved? You say, who was there, a person? Was there someone in your life?
My older brother was away at college and he got saved and he influenced me into it. And I was kind of just out of high school and was planning to go to college, but didn't have a solid grip on how to get all that done. I took a year off to kind of save money and go to college, and never got there
mm-hmm.
because Jesus saved me and I felt like I needed to save the world because he was coming back tomorrow.
Sure.
And as I understand, he still is.
Yeah.
So.
I hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
Any day now.
Do you feel like the war played a part in any of that for you?
No. I was on the tail end of the Vietnam War. The Jesus movement for you younger people is it's an offshoot of the hippie movement. It's kind of like the hippie movement without the drugs and without the sex.
That's how my uncle became a Methodist minister. He got swept up in that. He was going to go to college to be an engineer like his father, and then just felt the love.
Yeah, that's it. You feel like God's put his hand on you and you start doing all the stuff. So I did the street preaching and ran coffee houses and just really got dove in all the way to the deep end and never looked back. Until, about 8 years ago.
And what happened then?
Well, I was on staff at a church, a Foursquare church, and kind of got in. It was a church that was more of a cult than a church, and it got worse and worse.
You don't say.
Yeah. And so I was on staff there and started to see behind the curtain a little bit and got really disenchanted with all of it and really got cross with the senior pastor. And he ended up firing me because I was independent and not following the rules closely enough.
Right.
And so that process led me, when that happened, my two daughters and their husbands were interns in that church, kind of being groomed to be young pastors. And they were turned against me and shunned me. After I got crossways with the pastor.
Just forget now, you hadn't at this point, like, officially left the religion or declared atheism. You had just been fired from this specific church for thinking for yourself.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
And so they were essentially put in the position of having to choose between their dad and God. Because in those types of churches, the pastor presents himself as God's mouthpiece and God's authority. And so if you cross him, you're crossing God. And that's how it was positioned. I mean, he really denigrated me publicly and really, you know, shamed me in front of them and everyone else. And it was a big church, about 1,500 people, and I was very popular in the church, and so a lot of people left because of me, and I was accused of splitting the church and those kind of things. Yeah.
It sounds like a evangelical Game of Thrones type situation.
It was. I didn't have any dragons, though.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's borderline what you hear from, like, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons, in that, you know, the shunning for even daring to leave the, you know, that specific branch. It's. I mean, I could. I don't want to say I could understand if you were being shunned for atheism. I still think that's insane, but I know, I think we've all experienced that to some degree.
Right.
But that is just astonishing to me. Are you still estranged from your daughters?
Yes, I am.
I am so sorry.
My son is not. He's fine with me, and we have a good relationship. But my two daughters and between the two of them, I have six grandchildren, and I don't see them. And I don't see my daughters. So to finish that story, though, I was shunned for that, but I was still a believer. And so I was crying out to God for help and crying out to the denomination and local pastors. And I was going to another church. My wife and I was married at the time, since divorced, but, you know, we were doing all the things, leading small groups, doing prayer ministry, all the stuff that we always did. But I was, still not having my daughters in my life. And I was really, it was very upsetting.
It's two pieces of you that just aren't with you. I mean, it's like your body is being torn apart. I can only imagine.
So that essentially led me to begin to question, you know, where are you, God? I've been serving you and you're letting this happen. Why are you not helping? And that essentially led me to begin to question the idea that, are you really there even? I mean, you're not helping. So are you there? Are you there? Right. Hello, anybody home? And I realized, I realized nobody was. And like, so
it's that whole, you know, what kind of God would have let this happen to a good man? You know, someone who's done nothing but devote his life to your service, and then this happens, and how could it be?
Right.
Yeah. When you were diagnosed, you were diagnosed with ALS just a couple months ago.
Right.
Did you feel any resurgence in that need to pray or to reach out or to question? Yeah.
No. When I was done, I was done. I haven't had an inkling of a thought to return to God or to pray or to, you know, get right with God before I die or any of that stuff.
Right.
It was just a zero connection there.
So you're talking about being saved and like your brother being saved. It's I think it's interesting that even, you know, as an atheist who kind of rejects all that or doesn't believe in any of that, it's the terminology is still there. Like you clearly have spent a lot of time in this, and even though it might not be something you believe now, it's clearly like a kind of a part of who you are. And so like it's just
the language
it just kind of sticks out to me, because it's not usually what I would expect how an atheist to talk about that sort of thing. It just catches my ear, right? It stands out a little bit.
Interesting. Yeah. It's kind of like a mother tongue, you know?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like you're raised in a certain segment of the country and you have that accent. So I've got that Christian accent.
Oh yeah.
That's great.
Well, and it's just like, you know, anyone can say, you know, the Lord be with you. And everyone's like, and also with you, just in their head, even if they don't say it out loud, it is a brainwashing. That's how it works.
It took me a long time to train myself out of saying that.
I even sometimes think it when I'm watching Star Wars and they say, "May the Force be with you." In my head, I'm like, "And also with you." It's like, "No, God damn it, no." So, all right, let's talk about dying out loud.
Yeah.
And, and let's not, I mean, obviously we are all very sorry to hear about your diagnosis. That is, ALS is shitty. And I hope that, you know, that I know there's been some advances lately in science, and donations and research, and hopefully maybe we can, that something will come of it before it's your end. But talk to me about dying out loud. When did you feel, is this something that came to you the moment you found out? Did it take you a while to get to that place?
No, it was pretty immediate. I had been having symptoms for quite a while. I knew something was wrong and I just, you know, I needed to know what it was. So I started the first of the year going to the doctors, and I knew they would, you know, refer me to specialists and I would do tests and all that stuff. And so when I got the conclusive diagnosis and there was no question about it, I immediately knew that, okay, my life is changing, and I made radical quick decisions. I retired from the insurance business I was in and turned my clients over to another agent. I moved out of my apartment in with friends. I sold stuff. I gave stuff away. I just started making immediate plans to live whatever time I had left on my terms, and to do the things I wanted to do while I could do them, because this disease progresses to where you can do fewer and fewer things.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so I'm planning to travel. I spend time with people I want to spend time with. I don't spend time with people I don't want to spend time with. And so it's been and my message is carpe the fucking diem is one part of it. The other part is that we don't remember days. We remember moments.
I love that. And
that's a plaque I've had on my bookshelf for several years. When I left my marriage a couple years ago after, you know, dealing with the, a spouse who stayed a believer and in many ways doubled down, and we just got untenable, and we weren't seeing the girls and the grandkids. So I just rebooted my life a little over 2 years ago. And since then I have been, I mean, I've literally got a pillow on my couch that says carpe the fucking diem. And I've been living by those phrases and living for the moments and looking for the moments. And so now I'm just kind of doing that on steroids.
So, I'm just, ALS is kind of one of those diseases where you don't necessarily know how the disease is going to progress. For some people, it progresses more quickly. For some people, it progresses slower. Do you have any idea how the progression is going to go for you, or is it just kind of like you find out how it happens when it happens?
You won't know until you start feeling the loss of things. And so my neurologist just said that exactly. He said it's impossible to predict where it'll go next. It started with me and my fingers and hands and arms. And with some, it starts in their legs. But they don't know how fast it'll progress. They don't know where it'll go next. The average is 3 to 5 years from onset of symptoms, which has been about a year for me. So I'm looking at a couple of years of good years, and that's really all I'm counting. I'm not counting, you know, I'm not intending to
decline. Yeah.
I'm not intending to ride it out to the bitter end. So I'm figuring I've got a year or two to really focus on doing the things I want to do and going where I want to go and being with people. And I'm just going places and doing things and living for the moments and recognizing the moments. And that's what I am trying to talk about is how valuable life is, and how we can seize the moments if we're looking for them.
You know, I like, you said something I really like. You said you're spending time with the people you want to spend time with. You're not spending time with the people you don't want to spend time with. I think when people think about, pardon the expression, I guess it's kind of apt, but when people think about like a bucket list, it's always things that they want to do. And it's never things that are like, and you know what? I'm not going to do this, and I'm not going to do this, and I'm not going to deal with those people anymore. Like, if there are people and things in your life that are a drain or a tax on you, and your time is suddenly a little more scarce and thus, you know, more valuable. Like, I think it's not everyone would immediately think of the things that you want to not to have to take up that time. Yeah. It's kind of interesting to think about.
I think too, that's a really good, you know, lead into, we were talking about how your secular friends and your Christian friends are dealing with this differently and, and reacting to you differently. How do you find that? I have an idea of how it's going, but I would love to hear how are people reacting when you tell them about, when you first told them about your diagnosis?
Well, the my atheist friends and my secular community, of which I'm surrounded by so many good people that love me, and I've got incredible support and people that all around me just here and present and all of that. And the best way I can put it is they run toward it and my Christian friends run away from it. And so, and my Christian, most of my family, brother, sister, mom, daughters, they're all evangelical Christians. And so, of course, they're praying for me, and they tell me that in their passive-aggressive way.
Yeah. But that's so helpful.
But they don't know what to say. They don't know what to say about my actual life. And and so what I've realized is that, you know, and I was in that world for all those years, so I know how they think. And the reality that they believe that this life is just a warm-up for the real life of eternity.
Yeah.
And so they minimize the value of this life. And so when they're faced with a diagnosis like mine, they really don't have any context in which to grab it and say, let's soak it up. Let's do what we can do. Let me be with you. I want to hang out with you. I want to take trips with you. And so they just kind of avoid it. And it's almost they're in denial of it.
I bet it's a lot of God has a plan.
Well, they don't even say those things. They may think that God's, you know, trying to get my attention so that I'll return to Him before I die. And they're praying that way. They're sending, you know, my sister-in-law sent my son and his wife an email to that effect. And it pissed them off because my son says, no, I want to, what's important for me is that we focus on what time is left. And so that's been the difference. The big difference is, and it's almost like Christians, they have such a fetish for the afterlife.
Yeah, they do.
They can't live in this life.
No, that's great. I love that term. That's exactly what it is. They all just can't wait to get to heaven and tuck into a big roast beef dinner with Jesus. Like it's nothing.
And yet they're afraid of death. And it's mind-boggling. They're the most afraid of death of anyone I know.
Well, because they're afraid that they're going to go to the wrong place.
Yeah, what if we got it wrong? And whereas with those of us who've kind of said no to all of it, we realize that this life is what we have. Yep. And we've got to soak it in, and we've got to make the most of it. We got to seize
the
moment.
Carpe the fucking diem.
To me,
so that's been the difference I've noticed.
Yeah.
To me, the thing that I always find interesting is if they believe in an afterlife, then they also must believe that you are not going to heaven.
Right.
I mean, you've committed the unpardonable sin.
Yeah.
We all have.
Yeah. You're going to go to hell.
Right.
So they're not going to see you after you die.
You'd think they'd want to spend time with you now.
You think that because they should want to spend time with you now, because no matter what happens to them, they're never going to see you again.
Right. Yeah. If they have sort of infinite paradise awaiting them and you're going to be not there, then there's still finite time, right? Like, you think they would realize that and want to make the most of the time that way.
You would think. It makes no sense.
It's really, well, no, none of it does. I mean, honestly, that's kind of the point, is when you try to make sense of it, you get fired from your church.
Yeah, exactly. You ask too many questions, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it's, you know, you said something, and if you don't want to answer this question, that is okay. But you said you have no intention of writing it out to the bitter end. Are you planning on going to like Switzerland or something, or do you have a plan for how you want to end your life?
I was thinking about going hang gliding and just kind of steering it into a cliff. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that sounds probably like it won't work.
There are states, and there are some states where it's legal to do doctor-assisted dying.
Yep.
And I'm looking into what the legal ramifications of that are, how long you have to be a citizen there. And so there are some things I'm looking into. There are some options in Switzerland. Yeah. In fact, we have a contact that Cass knows through his show, his podcast over there, that, you know, I've got contacts from people who are willing to help me do that. But I do intend to take that to take that step when the time comes. I don't know when that time will be, and I don't have to decide that now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I just don't see any reason not to do it that way. It makes no sense otherwise.
I would do the same, especially with ALS. Personally, yeah. I don't want to be locked in my body, you know. Nope. And I think that it's a brave choice personally, and I think that it's something that, if you are an atheist and you believe this is all we have, then why do you want your last memories of it? You know, why not have it be ending on the best way, like control the, your own destiny in that way.
Yeah. We should be able to control that with a fatal diagnosis like this.
Agreed.
I believe it would be legal in every state if it weren't for religion.
Oh, yeah. A lot of things would be, but yes,
I'm going to get involved in advocating for that and trying to talk to people in the state house here in Tennessee and just begin. I know there's people probably doing it. I haven't looked into it yet. I've been too busy living, but at some point,
sure.
I'm going to get involved with raising my voice against that nonsense, because I think it's absolutely immoral that they would tell me I have to stay alive until I quit breathing. That's just
goddamn
immoral.
Right. I agree. So what's just real quick. So what's your next trip?
I am going to LA leaving Thursday for 5 days. Doing a podcast interview out there in person, and I'm meeting some people that I've kind of known online and haven't met yet, and just spending some time looking at the Pacific Ocean because I haven't been there in a while. Then I'm home for a couple of weeks, and then I go to New York City. My son lives in New York City with his wife. I was there a couple of weeks ago. I'm going back to spend a few days there, and then I'm flying out from there to Rome. I'm spending a week in Italy.
Oh, wow.
That sounds awesome.
I actually had that trip planned before this diagnosis, so I'm really glad.
Well, that's really great. It sounds like you're packing in all of the things you need to do at the end there. I'm so grateful that your son is still in your life.
Yeah, he's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dave. This was amazing, but it's time to get on to five questions.
Five questions.
Five questions. All right. So we've sent them to you ahead of time. I hope that you've been giving them a little thought, but don't give them too much thought. These are not deep.
I looked them over, but I didn't write anything down. I'd rather just shoot off the cuff with them.
Perfect. Yeah. That's how we do here. All right. Nick, give me question one.
What conspiracy theory do you find most interesting or compelling? It doesn't have to be one you believe in. Just it could be one you find entertaining.
The resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Good timing, since it's the Tuesday after
yeah,
Easter.
Yeah, it's right after. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. It sure is. I still want to know. I mean, between that and the Immaculate Conception, or no, Mary's Immaculate Conception. Between that and the Virgin Birth, I would love to know how people just wrap their minds around that.
Like, I know, right?
It's magic.
It is. It's magic. All right,
magic.
Tim.
Oh, I'm up.
Yeah.
Question number two. What is your perfect 2-week vacation? Money is not a limiting factor, but physics is.
I would say seeing all of Europe that I can. I'm fascinated with Europe, the history of it, the beauty of it, the diversity of it. That would be where I in fact, I'm probably going to do that.
European tour.
Have you been to any part of Europe before?
Yes. Last year I was in Barcelona and southern France, and I've been back in years past. I was in Germany
and I've been to
England.
All right.
Excellent. All right.
Well, I hope you get to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too.
Question three. What's a movie or book that changed your life, and how or why?
Lonesome Dove.
Lonesome Dove. Because
it has to do with the epic friendship of two guys who just lived their life together. One of them died, and it just showed that in a beautiful way. It's an incredible movie. It was actually a miniseries. But
it's
an incredible movie.
Yeah, that's amazing. I have seen just a little bit of that, and I don't like a lot of Westerns, but I really liked that.
I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah,
before.
It's good.
Question four is, what's the geekiest thing you've ever done or said?
Well, that was fairly recent. I'm a big fan of Joe Bonamassa. He's a blues rock guitarist.
All right.
And I had some therapy time at the beach right as I was ending my marriage, and listened to his music for hours and hours. And I've been a huge fan of his for years, for the last 3 years probably. And then he was in concert here in Nashville last summer, and I went to the concert, and then I found out he'd moved to Nashville. He's a cigar lover like I am, and I ended up running into him at my cigar bar a few months after that, and I saw, and I just, I, you know, in Nashville, the unspoken rule is you don't bother the celebrities.
Right, because they're everywhere.
But I said, listen, Joe, I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to do, I know I'm not supposed to do this, but I got to tell you, I'm a huge fan. And we chatted, he was great, but I said, I fangeeked on him bad.
That sounds really cool, though.
Yeah, well, it was.
See, there's a moment.
Yeah, that's a moment. That's a moment. Right.
Yeah.
Don't know what day it was, but you remember the moment.
It was a moment. That's right.
Are we on question number five already?
We are.
Question number five, what's your favorite hangover cure?
Hair of the dog, baby. Yeah.
Yeah. You're a man after my own heart, Dave.
Gotta get back on that horse.
That's right. That's right.
Get back on that horse.
You'll never learn. Awesome. Dave Warnock, thank you so much. This was really great. I'm really glad we got to talk to you.
Me too.
I hope that your remaining years are full of life and wonder and passion and friendship. And I hope check in with us again.
Carpe the fucking diem, man.
Yeah, man.
Carpe the fucking diem.
We're gonna
baby.
Follow. We're gonna be following your story here.
Good deal.
All right.
I appreciate
where,
it.
Where can we find you online?
Castle Marie will send the contact links. Everyone's agnostic.com.
Okay.
You know, the Cass's podcast.
Yeah.
And then //Dave, and there's a page.
Great.
With my contact info, my calendar, my blog, all the stuff is on there.
That's amazing.
Great.
All right. Thank you so much. We have been Geeks Without God. If you want to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, all that good stuff, rate us on iTunes and Stitcher. You know, we love it. We also do have a Patreon. And if you want to support us and be one of our patrons, that would be great. We have a new patron, Nick.
Woohoo!
We have a new patron, Jennifer Jordan.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for joining us, Jennifer. If you want to answer our five questions, send in your answer. Or excuse me. If you want to ask us five questions, that's what we're doing right now. I forgot. If you want to ask us five questions, send in your questions to 5questions@geeksthatgod.com. Ask us any question. No question too small, too deep, too shallow, or too big. And if you're a Patreon supporter, please put that in the subject line and I'll bump you into the patron queue, which right now is like, I think, two or three people.
Yeah.
We got a lot of questions.
Soon.
I'm excited. Thank you all so much for getting in there with us. Thanks again. We've been Geeks Without God and we'll see you another week.
Bye.
Bye.
Carpe the fucking diem.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter @GeeksWithoutGod. Social media!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Yeah, that's probably easier.